In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball.
Oh, yeah.
Let's all go to the lobby.
Oh, you better believe it. Alan Adams here in studio with us to talk movies on Pass the Popcorn. Happy Monday, Al. Uh-oh.
Delicious things to eat.
Let's try again.
How about now?
Oh, yeah, you're on.
Excellent.
Is this on?
Thump, thump, thump. Sibilance.
We forgot to do the mic checks. I was confused.
Oh, that's okay. We usually do that only when somebody from the outside is coming in. Alan, we assume it's all going to work. Carrie, you'll be happy to know, though, and Alan can confirm this on, I would say, nearly every occasion that Alan was here when you were away, I did not have his microphone ready to go at the beginning. Fumbling.
Oh, yeah, just the it was never as long as it felt, but it was just like, it's just hearing just Rich mutter, which button, which just staring at the screen.
Yeah.
In fear.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all backwards when I'm over where you are. I'm looking at the world from my perspective here.
Yeah. I mean, literally, you turn yourself right around when you come over here.
Right. Exactly. How was your weekend?
It was pretty good. We had to rearrange some plans, which was kind of a bummer. My niece, was supposed to have a birthday party down in Massachusetts, but they had been spending school vacation in Florida and canceled flights and the whole thing.
Good
and
boy.
So we wound up staying a little closer to home, and that's fine. Like, I quite enjoy my house, but it's just one of those things where it's like you hate to think about a kid being disappointed.
Right. Well, we're glad you're here. This kid's not disappointed.
Yes, I am here, and I am happy to do so.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And we were chatting in the break about Major League Baseball and the owners and the players not being able to get their act together. And, of course, all of it, because it's all about us, threatens our fantasy baseball
season.
That's
right. You know, it's if you can't do right by the, by your thousands upon thousands of employees and other people impacted by the economic realities of missing baseball games. Please think of the Bangor Drum Slowly League, because, really, like, what else do we have?
Right. And Alan's Coffee Brandies, who made a great run at the pennant last year and are just loaded again.
We're
this
looking
year.
Good, man. And it's just like, it's one of those things where it's like, I would really like to be able to take advantage of that. But, I tell you, it is not looking super as far as all that is going. And it's like, I dip in and out because I can't, like, it's one of those things where I could easily allow myself to really get sucked into the minutia of the whole thing.
Mm.
And so I have to try to keep it at arm's length, but I'll dip back in and, dip in and out. And then, basically I just, I can usually take the temperature of the situation by whatever angry tweet Jeff Passan has just sent out. Look, people want to frame this millionaires versus billionaires, whatever. It's as far as I'm concerned, it's not even a comparison because you're talking about, yacht on yacht rich people, basically paying for a service and frankly underpaying for a service. And yes, to us, millions of dollars, whatever, but in terms of the overall value of the services provided, it's a drop in the bucket and everybody knows it, which is I'm never going to understand these people who ride for the owners. I just don't get it.
No, because they're completely to blame for this.
Yes, 100%. Spring training could start tomorrow.
Yeah.
And it's all those in the course of negotiations, the stuff could be happening.
Right.
But they don't want to because they don't care.
Yeah. And they don't want to pay people.
Nope.
Crazy. All right. Let's talk about happier things. Movies. You've seen three of them, or we're going to talk about three that you've seen since last we spoke. Cyrano, No Exit. And one I hadn't heard of, Studio 666. Where do we begin?
Well, we're going to save that last one for
a minute. All right.
But let's start with No Exit. It's a Hulu original, a thriller, streaming on the service. It dropped this Friday. It's one of those movies Doesn't have a ton of familiar faces. Probably the most famous of the bunch. Dennis Haysbert plays a supporting role in the film. But the basic gist is a young lady named Darby is in a rehab facility dealing with substance abuse issues. She gets a call telling her that her mom has been hospitalized. And so she wants to go see her mom. The facility's policies don't allow for that. So she busts out, steals a car, and makes her way. I believe there she's somewhere in Northern California or the Pacific Northwest, and she has to make her way to Salt Lake City. So she's going through through the mountains and whatnot, and there's a huge snowstorm, a surprise snowstorm that she didn't see coming. It's so severe, in fact, that all the roads are being shut down. And so she is directed to a visitor center that has been opened for people to travelers to wait out the storm. She goes in, and that's where she meets a man and his wife. That would be Dennis Haysbert, and his wife is played by Dale Dickey. He's a retired veteran. She's a retired nurse. And then there's a charming young man named Ash, and a twitchy sort of fella who goes by Lars. And they're all just sort of, you know, strangers in this place. No cell service. Like, everything's really rough. So they, at one point, Darby steps outside in an effort to, you know, get some bars and, you know, send some messages, find out how her mom is doing, whatnot. And as she's out in the parking lot, she hears this noise. And she goes over and looks through the window of this of a van that's parked in the lot. And there's a young girl bound and gagged inside. And so one of these four people in this visitor center is a kidnapper. And that's basically, and that's where we go. And that, so you have this basic sort of locked room mystery kind of situation where she has to determine one, who has done this, and two, what can she do about it? And so you're in this situation with strangers where you don't know who you can trust, if you can trust anybody. The sort of story develops from there. I'm not going to go any farther than that because it's actually a pretty well-managed sort of twisty-turny kind of narrative. There are a number of turns that you will see coming, and a couple that you might not. And in the grand scheme of things, that's a pretty good batting average as far as thrillers go. It's pretty well made. The performances are good. Again, like I said, not a lot of familiar faces. But everybody does some really good work. They the filmmakers do a great job making this sort of taut. It's very briskly paced. Comes in about an hour and a half, it's got that sense of propulsion that I think you really need for a good thriller. Like, it never really stops, which is good because, you know, if you had the time to stop and start and really sort of get granular with what's going on, like, things are going to come apart a little bit, but you don't really have time for that. It just moves from beat to beat in a way that's really pretty compelling. Again, not a great movie, but if you like this sort of thing, you're gonna have a pretty good time with No Exit.
Excellent. All right, how about the musical version of Cyrano?
So this has proven to be a surprisingly polarizing movie for people.
Yes.
It's not what I would have expected to really sort of, create some sort of harsh divide between moviegoers. For the record, I fall in the pro category. I actually quite liked this movie. It's based on the famous play, Edmund Rostand play from, I believe 1897, Cyrano de Bergerac. There have been scores of adaptations of this story over the years, some straightforward, some a little looser. The one I always go to is Steve Martin in Roxanne, which is a wonderful version of this story. This is much more straightforward, although it is not taken directly from the Rostand play, but rather the 2018 musical adaptation of the story. It stars Peter Dinklage as the titular Cyrano. Kelvin Harrison Jr. As his protege Christian, Haley Bennett as the object of everyone's affection, Roxanne, and a wonderful supporting cast as well. And for those who are unfamiliar, with the story of Cyrano. First of all, read a book. second of all, it's basically in traditionally Cyrano is presented as someone with a very large nose, someone who is a poetic soul, a great warrior, but conventionally unattractive. He's in love with Roxanne. Roxanne is in turn in love with Christian, who Cyrano chooses to help woo Roxanne due to his own misgivings about his own value as a romantic partner. And that's pretty much the gist. And that's the story we get here, only there are a bunch of songs involved as well. Songs are pretty good. I enjoyed it. I will say, and this has been a pretty consistent criticism, Peter Dinklage, not a strong singer, but he's fine. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, he's not a pop star, but as far as, you know, for, you know, he's not going to star on Broadway or anything like that, but he's fine. And I really liked his take on the character. It's a much more insular sort of interior Cyrano, as opposed to the sort of put on a show boisterousness that you often get, with that character. It's an inspired choice, very different direction, to take that character. The other performances, Haley Bennett is lovely. She's a wonderfully talented, actress, and I look forward to seeing more from her, in the future. Calvin Harrison Jr. of course is great as well. And, Joe Wright is the director. Like, this is a guy who really knows how to put on a show when it comes to these kinds of period set, you know, pieces. He has a really wonderful eye for creating these vast sort of pictures. That's only accentuated by the fact that he's really pretty good at handling like the production number aspect of it. And they really do a good job of sort of blending the two aspects, the musical aspect and the dramatic aspect. Doesn't really feel broken up like it often does in movie musicals. The transitions are pretty seamless. As I said, the performances, like, look, I think Peter Dinklage is great. Like, I think he's a wonderful actor, and he's wonderful here. I think there are people out there who have very strong opinions about how that character in particular should be played. And he does not meet those specifications. He is not your traditional Cyrano de Bergerac, sure, in any real sense. If you're attached to that, that sort of mode of playing, I can see how this movie would find this to be a little off-putting.
What is it about his portrayal that people don't think is perhaps true to the source material?
I think it's because he's actually allowed to be sad in this one, as opposed to, you know, the whole brave face aspect that you so often get. So we actually get to experience a little bit of that interiority, and we get to sort of get a sense of what his life must have been like to get him to this place where he feels like the only way he can love and be loved is vicariously from a distance, you know. And I love that. I think it's a really interesting take on the character. Do I think everyone could pull it off? Absolutely not. But I think Dinklage, there's this wonderful solemnity to him, that I think
right in the eyes.
Yeah, you know, and it just does. And he's so well known for his work on Game of Thrones, which never really took advantage of that aspect of his ability. I don't think
Station Agent.
The one, right? Like that's the movie where, honestly, like you watch, you can see the seeds of Cyrano in the person he plays in The Station Agent. Like, it's that kind of, it's just, I don't know, it's okay. It doesn't have to be this flamboyant, bombastic portrayal, although there are those moments. And the fact that there are those moments contrasted with these other ones, I don't know, it just makes the whole thing feel more effective to me. But again, as I said, I definitely understand if you have strong feelings about this story, I can see how this version might not necessarily work for you. But as far as I'm concerned, I thought it was lovely.
All right. And finally, Station, is it 666 or is it 666?
It's Studio 666.
That's the studio, right?
Yes. look, man, I don't know why this movie exists. I don't know who it's for. I don't know what steps were taken along the way to lead to a world wherein this movie happened. But here we are. It's a story concept by Dave Grohl of the Foo Fighters.
Oh, okay. All right. I wasn't sure what this was, but I've seen the
starring
trailer. Yeah.
The Foo Fighters.
Yes.
As fictionalized versions of themselves. Directed by a guy whose previous claim to fame, near as I could tell, was the fact that he directed a bunch of Slayer videos. and it's a horror movie. Like, it's a horror comedy. The basic gist is we're introduced in 1993, this house in Encino. Something very terrible has happened. There's a bunch of music equipment, recording equipment set up. We get to watch as a young woman is murdered brutally. And then boom, title card. And it's like, oh, okay, so this is what we're doing. And then we find out that the Foo Fighters, they're working on their 10th album. They're trying to figure out a way to make it spectacular and special. Their manager, the aptly named Shill, played by Jeff Garlin, is like, I got just the place for you. And he's like, he calls up his buddy and says, we're sending the Foo Fighters here to record. We get there, and once you know it, it's the same house from the opening. as it turns out, a lot of bad stuff going on in this house. And we watch as Dave Grohl specifically struggles with writer's block and is trying to find the sound necessary for his this new album. All the while, scarier and weirder stuff keeps happening around the place. Everybody's kind of like, we should probably go. And Dave Grohl's like, no, we're not going to go. And then he goes into the basement and finds a reel-to-reel tape recorder that contains the sound that he's been looking for. And then it just all goes to heck. Here's the thing. This is a movie clearly by and featuring people who love this type of movie. The horror aspect of it, actually not bad. There's a lot of really strong practical effects work. It's over the top gory, but in a fun kind of Sam Raimi way. Like it's entertaining. The CGI is brutally bad, but those moments are relatively few and far between, so that's fine. The comedy, I don't know if you could hear the air quotes when I said that. It's very, very basic, like dumb bro, like lots of talk about butts and genitals and, talking about each other's grandmas. And it's just not very good. And it's not helped by the fact that as actors, the Foo Fighters are a fantastic rock band.
Even Dave Grohl?
See, Grohl's the best of the bunch.
Yeah.
And he's clearly having a great time because he has this wonderful he gets to play multiple versions of his own sort of character. And so he's really going for it in a way that, you know, while not what anyone would go so far as to call good, he's having fun. And so it's hard for you as a viewer to not have fun.
Right.
But man, the returns diminish very quickly after that. Like there are a couple of guys in the band. Pat Smear is the most egregious offender. But they all have these moments where it's like the light went on the camera and they just forgot how to like behave like human beings. Like they forgot how to people. And so there's a lot of weird stiffness and like barely suppressed smirks. And no one seems quite sure like how they got there or what they're supposed to do now that they are here. The supporting cast, like Garland's great. Whitney Cummings is in this as the neighbor to the spooky haunted house. Will Forte shows up in a couple of scenes as a like food delivery guy, and he's clearly having a good time. But it's just, again, I just have to come who is this movie for? I just don't understand. Like, are there that many like Foo Fighters completists out there? Like I just, you know, it's look, and I get it. Like, if I was in a gigantic rock band, would I want to try to like do a mashup of Evil Dead and Hard Day's Night? Yes, I would. I absolutely would. But it just doesn't work in the way. You know, I cut in the way. It just doesn't work. But that being said, man, I really had a good time watching this movie. It's because it is so bizarre and it's so just out of nowhere. Like, just the mere fact that the Foo Fighters were like, "Oh, it's a global pandemic. I don't know. What do you want to do? We can't tour. I don't know. What do you want to do?" And then Dave Grohl's like, "Let's make a movie." And everyone's like, "Sure, let's do that." It's so hard to review something like this because it's like viewed as a movie, it is objectively not very good.
Now, is there new original Foo Fighters music?
Not really.
No, okay.
No. There's not a ton of music at all. Like there's some recording sessions, but it's all built around the same sort of weird spooky song, okay, that is a because central plot point.
I thought maybe it was a launching pad for a new album.
You might think that.
But no.
In retrospect, someone probably should have thought that. But it's so interesting because it feels very much a product of time and place, like the sort of thing that simply couldn't have come to be at any other moment. As sort of a almost like a curio or an artifact, it's kind of fascinating. It's not very long. It's it's entertaining enough for what it is. Like, don't go in there expecting, you know, any sort of measure of quality as far as like movies are concerned. But everyone involved seems to be having a good time. And ultimately, like, it's almost infectious, the good time. And so you find yourself having fun. And then, there are just ridiculous, over-the-top, gory moments that are so extreme that no one could possibly find this movie scary. Like, it's that over-the-top. But yeah, look, not good, definitely fun.
I mean, they really had nothing to lose because when you think about rock and roll horror films, the only other one to compare it to would be Kiss Meets the Phantom of the Park, and it's got to be better than that.
Right. Like when you don't actually have to leave the ground to clear the bar, you're in pretty good shape. But yeah, it's I can't stress enough, you know, please don't think I'm saying this is good. Like, it's important to me. Like, I don't have much of a reputation, but what reputation I do have, I would like to make clear, I'm not saying this is a good movie, but I had a good time, and I think it's very possible that you will too.
It's number one in this genre, at least.
Yes.
One of two.
Thank you, Alan.
My pleasure.
Alan Adams of The Main Edge, talking movies here on Pass the Popcorn on Downtown.